ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of the Politics Now podcast. 2026 is already shaping up to be another huge year in politics, with inflation remaining persistently high, lingering housing challenges, and now a royal commission getting underway. So join me and the sharpest minds at the ABC to cut through the political spin and bring you what politics means for you. That's Politics Now, and you can hear it on the ABC Listen app.
He spent almost 2 hours outlining what he believes to be a myriad of achievements. That's the longest State of the Union address ever recorded. But has Donald Trump convinced voters that his first year in office has been a raging success? And can he turn his tanking popularity around before the midterm elections in November? Today, Dr. Emma Shortis, a US politics expert at the progressive think tank, the Australia Institute, on President Trump's State of the Union address. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
Today, our border is secure. Our spirit is restored. Inflation is plummeting. Incomes are rising fast. And America is respected again, perhaps like never before. People are asking me, please, 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 Mr. President, we're winning too much. We can't take it anymore. We're not used to winning in our country. And I say, no, 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 you're going to win again. You're going to win big. You're going to win bigger than ever. What a difference a president makes.
Emma, Donald Trump, he warned that he'd be giving a long address, and wow, didn't he deliver on that?
Look, he did, Sam. It's not surprising. Trump's last State of the Union's speech was a record breaker, and Trump is often a very straightforward man with a very straightforward ego. It was clear that he wanted to break that record again, and it looks like he's done it.
It was rather theatrical as well, wasn't it? Americans are winning too much, apparently.
And that's an old theme of Donald Trump's. You know, back in his first presidential term and in the lead-up, he talked about how Americans would be tired of winning. You know, they'd be winning so much that they'd be tired of it. He likes to hit those points and described the United States as the most exceptional nation ever on the face of the earth.
Yes.
And himself is singularly responsible for, you know, reviving that version of the United States.
Yeah, it did. And must note the US Olympic gold ice hockey team was actually in the room. So that was partly to do with that. But look, his big line, I suppose, was that he inherited a nation in crisis and then he has fixed it. In just 1 year, he's turned everything around. That's what he was trying to convince voters, I suppose.
Look, that's right. And again, you know, that's a theme that Trump has returned to again and again, that I alone can fix it, and that the United States was in a dire crisis, particularly an economic crisis, a crisis of wokeism, and that he has singularly turned that around. That, of course, doesn't gel with the statistics that we have or the sentiment generally of the American population, which overwhelmingly disapproves of what the president is doing. But he is remarkably good, I think, at turning the narrative around, at dictating the narrative, and certainly his base will have enjoyed this performance, I think.
All right, well, Emma, let's delve into some of the highlights then. Now, illegal immigration was a standout theme. He went so hard on the issue, didn't he? Just tell me about that.
Look, he did, and this is an issue that, you know, Trump thinks won him the election. You know, he ran on a policy of mass deportations, and throughout the speech has highlighted examples of, you know, what he claims are illegal immigrants committing crimes and the need for those people to be deported.
Lizbeth's killer was a previously arrested illegal alien who had broken in and brutally extinguished the brightest light in her family's life. We're getting them the hell out of here fast. We don't want them.
And this plays very well with his base. It isn't playing particularly well with the rest of the American public, but he knew, I think Trump knew going into this speech, that this that issue would provide him with a number of opportunities to demonize Democrats and to suggest that they, you know, disagreed with his statement that the job of law enforcement and the American government should be to protect American citizens above illegal aliens.
If you agree with this statement, then stand up and show your support. The first duty of the American government is to protect American citizens, not illegal aliens. Isn't that a shame? You should be ashamed of yourself not standing up.
He works particularly well when he is being divisive, you know, when he's pitting Americans against each other. And it's not surprising that he kept returning to this issue.
Democrats are destroying our country, but we've stopped it just in the nick of time.
He was really also highlighting grim details of crimes committed by illegal immigrants. You know, one case was of the Ukrainian girl that was stabbed on a train in North Carolina.
No one will ever forget the expression of terror on Irina's face as she looked up at her attacker in the last seconds of her life. She died instantly. She had escaped a brutal war only to be slain by a hardened criminal, set free to kill in America, came in through open borders. Mrs. Zaretska, tonight I promise you we will ensure justice for your magnificent daughter, Irina.
Why was he being so graphic and detailed about these things in this address, do you think?
Yeah, look, I mean, regular Trump watchers will know that he does this a lot. He actually really relishes describing violence in graphic detail and particularly blood. It is still quite shocking, Sam, the way that, you know, on a stage like this, he forces people to relive the worst moments of their life in graphic detail on not just national, but global television. Though it is striking that he didn't speak in a lot of detail about ICE, in particular about Immigration and Customs Enforcement, who are the federal agents who are on the ground in places like, you know, Minnesota, for example, because that issue is playing so badly. You know, the way that those agents are behaving is playing so badly in the American community. Mm. So I think that was striking. But of course, I don't want to understate just how much he was still engaged in that xenophobic and racist rhetoric that we've come to expect from the president.
Well, Emma, the economy, of course, was another big ticket item for him. Over and over again, he said, Americans are better off now than they were a year ago. Again, really trying to convince the audience that is an absolute fact.
Mm. And again, you know, he's very good at that, Sam. He's very good at setting the narrative, at convincing people that black is white. You know, that's a particular Trump skill. But this is an issue that is really dogging the president. You know, part of his election platform, again, was on affordability. He talked about the price of groceries a lot. And
eggs.
Yeah, exactly, and eggs.
The price of eggs is down 60%, Madam Secretary, thank you. The cost of chicken, butter, fruit, hotels, automobiles, rent is lower today than when I took office by a lot.
And he's really failed to address that problem. And, you know, opinion polling is suggesting that Americans are really feeling the pinch. Trump's tariffs in particular are hurting Americans. Our own prime minister has described them as an act of economic self-harm, and that's what they are. And Americans are noticing that. So that's why he focused as much as he did, for example, on the price of gasoline to try and, I suppose, divert attention to the things that he is doing. So, again, you know, we knew he would talk about affordability, but whether this actually convinced convinces anybody, I think, is another question.
And he really was doubling down on those tariffs, wasn't he? He condemned the Supreme Court decision to overrule those. Four of the justices were actually in the chamber, but he loves tariffs. He was saying he thinks that tariffs could replace income tax. So he just won't step away from the tariff thing, will he?
No, he won't. And again, you know, that's been consistent with Trump since the 1980s. Like, the tariffs are a thing that he has loved, and he continues to insist that other countries pay those tariffs to America. But that's just not how it works. You know, regular Americans are bearing the cost of those tariffs. And for him to suggest that they might replace income tax is pretty extraordinary. But, you know, that's reflective of, I think, the broader ideological project that underlines not necessarily Trump himself, but the Trump movement that wishes to return the United States to an era when income tax didn't exist, you know, to a mercantilist era of tariffs and no income tax and might makes right. And he sometimes, I think, disguises that. But the reality is that his economic policies are by and large designed to enrich those people who are already extraordinarily rich at the expense of working Americans.
All right. Well, it was an hour and 20 minutes into his speech that he turned his focus to foreign affairs, threatening to use the US military might against Iran.
We are in negotiations with them. They want to make a deal, but we haven't heard those secret words. We will never have a nuclear weapon.
How does that sit with voters, do you think, given his America First stance that he ran with, you know, to become president?
It really jars with his positioning of himself as the president of peace. Like, Trump came to power the first time really on the back of his opposition to the forever wars. He was one of the first people on the conservative side of politics in the United States to say that the Iraq war was a mistake, that the forever wars were a mistake. And so there is certainly part of his base that strongly objects to his returning of the United States to the Middle East, not just in this recent amassing of US forces, but in the strikes against Iran last year. The reality is that that part of the base does not have enough power, I think, you know, within the dynamics of the administration to make a difference. And we were talking earlier about Trump's relishing of violence and the way he describes violence in graphic detail. That's directly related, I think, to the way he sees international relations and war. You know, Trump loves talking about bombs. He loves talking about domination, and that's the way he approaches foreign policy. But having said that, it was interesting that, you know, you said, Sam, he didn't get to foreign policy in Iran until an hour and 20 minutes in, and actually didn't really spend that much time on it. You know, he will often speak about Iran in more detail just in kind of Oval Office press gatherings, and so didn't really give us any more information. But certainly from my perspective, you know, looking at the history of American military interventionism, the momentum is towards a strike or something bigger on Iran, just given that amassing of forces. And Trump, I think, only reinforced that when he said diplomacy is his preference, but he's clearly willing to use force.
As president, I will make peace wherever I can, but I will never hesitate to confront threats to America wherever we must.
Yeah, okay, so we'll wait and see on that. Of course, Emma, it would not be a Trump speech if he did not reference election fraud. His opponents are cheaters, he says.
Yeah. And this particularly was around what's called the SAVE Act, which is, you know, Trump's effort to really, I suppose, dominate the election process in the United States, to require things like voter ID on registration.
Cheating is rampant in our elections. It's rampant. It's very simple. All voters must show voter ID.
It's unlikely that this act will pass the Senate. It doesn't look like it will happen. But, you know, this was Trump, again, peddling those lies about elections, about election fraud, with a view, I think, quite firmly on the November midterms. You know, when he says that the only way Democrats can win is by cheating, he is continuing to lay that groundwork for a catastrophic undermining of faith in American elections that I think he will seek to use to hold on to power.
Why would anybody not want voter ID? One reason, because they want to cheat. There's only one reason. They want to cheat, they have cheated, and their policy is so bad that the only way they can get elected is to cheat. And we're going to stop it. We have to stop it.
All right. Well, Emma, what's your overall takeaway from this address? What does it tell us, do you think, about Trump's position? It comes, doesn't it, at a really critical time because the midterms are in November. And as we've mentioned, he's not doing so well in the polls a year on.
That's right. And he's clearly very aware of that. And I think Republicans are very wary of the midterms as well. But I think we can see from this speech what we have really already known, that, you know, Trump and Republicans, the broader far-right movement in the United States, see Trump's presidential victory as a once-in-a-generation victory for them. You know, they hold really all of the levers of power in the United States, the Supreme Court, Congress, and the executive branch. And it's very clear, and Trump made it clear once again tonight, that they will not give that up easily.
Does this help him in any way? Can he actually turn those polls around?
Look, it's very unusual for a State of the Union speech to turn around the fortunes of presidents. It's not impossible. Look, I would say, Sam, you know, you mentioned the midterms are in November. That's a political eternity away.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what will happen there? And we know, though, that Trump is a master of setting the narrative, of redirecting blame, and that in concert with the way that he and his administration are attempting to undermine the institutions of American democracy, I think is deeply concerning for the midterm elections.
Dr. Emma Shortis is Director of the Australia Institute's International and Security Affairs Program. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.